Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
It is Wednesday, which means we get to talk to our science communicator, the wonderful Dr. Carl. Dr. Carl, good morning. I'm hoping you're well.
Peachy keen, thank you, Dr. Howard.
Good. I'm very, very happy to hear it. So the first subject that we wanted to deal with this morning is sleep inertia. Now, I've heard of it. I'm just really not sure what it is.
It's the grogginess or the drowsiness or the lack of full mental cognition when you wake up immediately from a sleep. The classic study is where they get people into the laboratory, they get them to sleep, and then they wake them up and they give them, immediately upon waking, a bunch of simple mathematical problems.
Oh, gosh,
and
yeah.
They do so badly. And this came relevant to me when I was doing the 100-hour shift. Have you ever done a 100-hour shift?
No, I have not.
So you in a hospital?
How do you do a 100-hour shift?
Well, I lied. It's 96 hours. So you start on Friday morning. You do all of Friday, all of Saturday, all of Sunday, all of Monday.
Wow! And how much sleep do you get in the middle?
Officially, none.
Right, but you'll snatch a few minutes here and there. That is torturous.
Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday, 4 days continuously awake.
Wow.
And so one of the older doctors said, look, when they wake you up, do not make a decision for the first 10 minutes.
Interesting.
Take notes, write things down, engage them in conversation, write everything down. Do not rely on memory. Write everything down, but do not make a decision. And it turns out this was very good advice. So this inertia lasts anything between 15 minutes to 30 minutes, but sometimes can last for hours if you've been going through a stage of not getting enough sleep. So on one hand, we've got this disorientation, the grogginess, the lack of skillfulness on motor activity. You know, you might drop a cup of tea, but it settles after a while. And when we've gone looking with blood scanners, we've found that, and by the way, with the brain, while it weighs 2% of your body weight, it takes 20% of the blood supply. And what we've found is that there's less flow to the blood to the brain, and the blood velocity is a lot less. So that fits in with your not waking up thing. And also we find electrical changes where, you get a wave of wakefulness starting at the front of the brain and then gradually spreading to the back. And it takes a little while, and it depends on whether you wake up from a rapid eye movement sleep where you've been dreaming or not. But the bottom line is this: when you wake up, do not expect anybody to do anything more than be able to say, yes, I'll have a cup of tea. Do not expect any high-level mental functioning for the first quarter hour or half hour. It's unfair.
But this seems to differ quite greatly from person to person. I know in my own family, we often have this conversation. I wake up very, very quickly. Well, the minute my eyes are open, I'm active and can converse, whereas other people around me are a lot they need to wake up a little bit more gently and slowly. Is this a genetic thing? What is this?
We know it's real. We don't know why. In the same way that people are different heights, they have different responses to antibiotics, to food, et cetera, et cetera. Somebody just loves salt and vinegar chips and somebody doesn't. We don't know why.
Okay, so that is it's real.
Real, though.
But we don't know why. I'm just looking at one of them. Adam says, I won't decide to get out of bed. I'm now following Dr. Carl's advice. That wasn't his advice. You've got to be on your toes here because they'll, and Karen says, I wake up very quickly as well, like a lion. So that is quite cool. Okay, let's talk about this. Frogs faking death in order to avoid sex.
Yeah, so it's not all frogs.
Oh, but there's, yes. Otherwise, there'd probably be no frogs left.
But there's a species of frog called the European common frog.
Mm-hmm.
And they tend to live a solitary life.
Right.
Except for 2 weeks every spring. And then they head for the pool and they all try, to put it delicately, a free-for-all reproductive event called explosive breeding. But only for 2 weeks.
Okay.
And sometimes you can end up with so many males on top of a female, that the female can drown. They have to breathe air now and then.
Right.
Oh, gosh. And so the females have used various techniques. The first one is an evasive maneuver to flip the males off them. And they do that in 85% of cases. In about half the cases, they'll pretend they're a male by giving a particularly male croak, like, I'm a male. Get off me. You know, I haven't spoken. My frog language is not very good.
Yes,
something
yes.
Like
that. Right, right. Well, we can't check. You know, we can't verify that. It might be brilliant.
In one quarter of cases, they'll just pretend to be dead, and the male will just give up. And part of what's going on is there's differences between males and females. They call this classic sexual selection.
Oh, and interesting.
Sure, on one hand, both the male and the female want to do best at everything that they do. So for the males, they, if they were being simply brutal about it, would want to have, would want to mate with as many females as possible, to have as many offspring as possible. But the females are limited by their reproductive cycle and how many potential offspring they can generate, and then the cost that after the mating is over, they've got to then look after these little babies. Hmm. So with regard
to talk about a mirror of the real world. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so there's different costs and benefits and interests, and so the frogs have gone down this particular pathway.
Finally, education, USA versus China and Australia. Tell us about this.
Well, for most of the 20th century, the USA was way behind Europe in terms of education and their universities. And then immediately after the Cold War, around the middle of the century, immediately after the Second World War, they had the Cold War, where the USA and the Soviet Union didn't like each other very much, 1945 to 91. And then they didn't really do much from the USA point of view until in 1957, the Soviets launched the Sputnik, the first satellite in orbit. And the Americans responded by an education war. And over the next 15 years, they increased the funding for all sorts of education. Sorry about that. Increased the funding for all sorts of education by a factor of 6. And when I say all sorts, I mean childcare, primary school, high school, because it's the same students going through primary school and high school, and suddenly people learned so many skills. So a friend of mine who was living way back then in New York went to the New York Harbor School and learned what he called bending rope,
right,
which is making thousands of differences of knots, and how to weld and how to solder. And so education became such a big thing. And Dwight Eisenhower signed the National Defense Education Act, which just reformed education. And very quickly, the USA started having the best universities in the world.
So interesting.
And having the best education in the world. And as a result, they had this massive blossoming of technology. And then things began to slow down. And now we're in the second Cold War, but around education. And there's a few big comparisons between the USA and China. So China's been pouring money into education and increased it in education by a factor of 16. So way back, after 2000, the Chinese scholars produced hardly any papers, and now they do lots. Way back then, the USA led the world in most of 64 frontier technologies. We're covering stuff like defense and space and energy and the environment and computing and technology and building bridges and architecture. They led in 60 out of 64. Today, the Chinese lead with 57 of the 64. So originally it was the Americans had 60. Now the Chinese have 57. And by the way, just this last weekend, the USA fired all of its scientists in the Environmental Protection Agency.
Oof.
So the Chinese are pouring money into education and also into drugs. Like in 2015, 10 years ago, they made just 6% of all the new drugs. Now they're making half. So education, investing in education pays off. You know, for each dollar you put in, you get $5 back in 10 years, but you don't get money back the next 3 months.
Incredible. That's where we do need to leave it. Dr. Carl, thank you. As always, fascinating conversation. I'd love your thoughts, your reaction on 061-895-1019. It is 7:41.